On Tech News Today, the stock market crashed so hard this morning that Apple CEO Tim Cook tried to reassure CNBC Mad Money host Jim Cramer. Wait, what? Plus, the Hamburglar stole and leaked a McDonald's memo related to Android Pay, and now Apple's recalling the iPhone 6 Plus. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 24th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Our co-anchor today is CNET.com editor-in-chief Lindsay Turrentine. How are you doing, Lindsay?
I'm great, Mike. The rest of the world, kids are back in school, but not my world, so it's still summer.
What? What are you talking about?
Yep. Still summer for me.
Why?
My kids aren't back in school.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Unfair. Well, my kids are grown up and moved out of the house, so it's summer all year for me. Or no, it's school term, whatever it is. Whatever it is great. No, I miss my kids, but they are, we've been through that summer thing, and it is not fun. Well, you know, Lindsay, a funny thing happened today. You know, Tim Cook was on Good Morning America, and his appearance was actually leaked on some of the Apple blogs. And I looked at the story and said, you know, he's doing this big education initiative. And I thought, what is he up to? What's the big, you know, are they launching a new product? Is it a new service? Turns out it wasn't much to it. It was mostly just Apple's committed to education, and they donated $100 million to something or other. And I wondered, well, why the big deal? Now we learned that Google Classroom got an update and now has Google Calendar integration. They're a new teacher tool. So Google came out with actual educational stuff, and Apple want to sort of get in front of that, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little counter. We call that counter-programming in the editorial world.
Yes,
that's exactly. Some major counter-programming.
Exactly. Well, speaking of Apple and Tim Cook, our top story today is quite strange. The stock market continued its meltdown at the opening of the markets today. In less than an hour this morning, the Dow Jones fell more than 1,000 points. The best headline came from The Verge's Ben Popper, who said, quote, you know, the stock market is in trouble when Tim Cook is emailing Jim Cramer. Ben Popper is the business editor for The Verge and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, what did this Cook email say that was sent to Cramer?
So what really precipitated the big market rout we've seen globally for the last couple of days is economic slowdown in China. And Apple's biggest driver of growth over the last couple of quarters has also been China. So the idea that there'll be less demand in China could be seen as very dangerous for Apple's future returns. Tim Cook sent a letter to Jim Cramer, which was just sort of a reassurance. You know, it said our iPhone sales in China have been actually accelerating. We're doing great. You don't need to worry about us. And, the market has since bounced back, and Apple actually led that rally. So this was, you know, one of the CEOs of one of the biggest companies sort of reaching out and saying, everybody calm down. Like, you know, things are going well for us, and there's no need to panic yet.
So, Ben, is it possible that he's protesting too much? Sounds like this had the intended effect, but the stock market is not, you know, a group of fanboys at WWDC either, right? Just sort of saying things are okay. Do you think that that's enough, or do you think that Tim Cook kind of mildly freaking out is itself kind of freaky?
Well, yeah, I think the fact that he sent the letter is indicative of the fact that we are entering a serious correction, and it's possible that could snowball into an economic meltdown of to what size, I don't know, and nobody knows. I mean, all Tim Cook is really saying is, you know, the economy has been bad in China going back a number of months. They've had issues in their stock market. And so during that time, our growth has been accelerating. So, yes, you're right. The reassurance is a bit of a warning sign in and of itself. But, at the same time, we're not at meltdown yet.
Well, that's reassuring. I can't get a real handle on whether or not I think personally that Apple is going to be reporting some good quarters coming up soon. The reason is that the stellar quarter that they just had in China, especially, was the result of a couple of historically rare bits of pent-up demand. So for starters, they were not on China Mobile, the world's largest carrier, for a long, long time. Finally, they made a deal last year, and then the iPhone became available on China Mobile. And as people came through their upgrade cycles, a lot of people buying iPhones. The second one is that China loves gigantic phones. Apple only had tiny phones. And when they came out with the iPhone 6 Plus, finally they satisfied the Chinese market and many of the markets around the world with a big phone. And so that pent-up demand was satisfied in a big rush. And then we have the stock market troubles, which, if anything, in China will make people a little bit maybe less confident as the consumer confidence and so on is damaged by this whole problem, even if it recovers immediately. So I don't really have it, you know, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, Apple is building Apple stores like as fast as they possibly can. And so their presence in China is actually growing fast. So I don't really get a sense of whether Apple is going to be disappointing us all or if they're going to be impressing us again. What's your sense on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, in the email that he sent to Jim Cramer, Tim Cook points out that LTE penetration in China is still very low compared to other developed markets. And so that means there's still a ton of upside, people getting basically onto smartphones from feature phones, and they think they can capture a significant piece of that. So I'm not an Apple expert, and you shouldn't listen to me if you're picking stocks, but I don't think that the growth in China is over. Far from that. Is the best growth in China over? Perhaps, as you point out, you know, there were a couple of sort of choke points that were holding up, and a lot of demand was released in two quarters. But globally speaking, there's still a huge group of people that are moving from feature to smartphones, and Apple is poised to capture a huge percentage of that.
So, Bet, my last question is, do you think that there's any other CEO out there who could have the same effect by sending a letter to Jim Cramer?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Apple is completely unique in both, the size of the business. Recently they posted the largest quarterly profit in corporate history. They fluctuate in valuation, but they're up there with, the Exxons of the world. At the same time, it's a business that people can relate to more than an Exxon. Everybody has a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop. And so they feel connected to that as a consumer. So, no, I think Tim Cook is in a really unique position and is able to sort of offer a calming hand. You know, whether or not we should feel good about the world just because people are still buying iPhones, there's bigger macro issues out there that are leading to these stock market declines. But it was certainly an interesting thing to see from somebody who reports on technology, what Tim Cook's, right place is in the larger world of business.
And I thought it was kind of weird that instead of going to the big, heavy-hitting investor types, he went to a guy who basically has a carrot top-like show with props and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Although he is respected in many circles. So I guess he's a little of both. He's got a big platform and he's also a reasonably good financial analyst that I guess people listen to. Ben Popper's at TheVerge.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ben Popper. Ben, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I got some more news for you coming right up, but first let's talk about getting the very best phone you can and getting it subsidized with Gazelle. This show is brought to you by Gazelle today, and I've been talking about Gazelle since before I used to do it in ads. I used to do these ads on my own to people that I knew because I loved it so much. It's so easy to sell your used device to Gazelle. But more recently, they started selling devices, and this is a great idea. You know, people tend to be convinced by all the marketing and all the hype around brand new phones. You have to buy a brand new phone, and that is really probably not, for most of us, the best way to go. You want to buy the best possible phone you can for the money, right? That's what we all want to do. And the very best place to get the very best phone for the money is on Gazelle, because you can buy a certified like new phone that is a very, very newish phone. I mean, it's like a modern phone, the current phone, the iteration that's out there. And because it's certified like new from Gazelle, it's indistinguishable from a brand new phone. The only difference is that it has a significantly lower price. So if you're like most people, you have a budget. You have a certain amount you're going to spend, $500, right? So if you go to Gazelle and spend your $500 on Gazelle, you're going to get a better phone than if you take that and get an unlocked phone somewhere else. It's just the greatest way to always have the best phone. And of course, you take your old device, sell to Gazelle when it's still pretty new, and you get a lot of money for it. You'll subsidize the vast majority of the cost of that next phone. The combination of buying and selling to and from Gazelle is the way to always have the latest and greatest at the lowest cost. There's just nothing else like it. And of course, as I said before, it's the greatest place to sell your device. It's risk-free. They'll wipe your data for free. And they've paid nearly $200 million over a million customers. It's so easy. So easy. They send you a box. Everything's already printed on it. Just put the phone in the box, put the sticker on the outside of the box, and off it goes. So, so easy. Find out what your iPhone's worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. Android Pay was announced at Google I.O., but Google didn't announce a launch date at that time. Now it appears that the date might be in 2 days. Wednesday, August 26th. And the source could be Ronald McDonald, theoretically at least. The leak came from an internal memo at McDonald's. David Ruddock is senior editor at Android Police and joins us now. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Mike.
Now, does a Wednesday launch for Android Pay make sense to you?
Well, I mean, we really haven't heard anything up until this point. It wasn't clear when exactly Google planned to launch Android Pay when they announced it, other than later this year. The memo at McDonald's makes sense in light of the fact that, you know, we are coming near the end of the M developer preview for the latest version of Android, Marshmallow, obviously. And McDonald's is going to be a major Android Pay partner. And they do have reason, obviously, to know a date because they have to tell employees that you're going to have people coming into the store ostensibly to use this thing called Android Pay. And employees have to be able to tell them, OK, you need to press your phone against this thing. And it's essentially the same as Google Wallet in the way it works, but, you know, employees do need to be aware of the new name. Now, whether McDonald's information is accurate or it's based on old information, that's much harder to say.
So, David, you kind of alluded to this, but we've had Google Wallet for quite some time, right? Like, we've all been walking around seeing consoles and stores with the Google Wallet logo for years and years. What's the difference between these two services? How is it changing, and why is there a rollout at all?
Well, I think it's mostly it really is a reboot for Google's contactless payment brand, essentially. Google Wallet is being, as Google would put it, restructured into a service that allows you to store money on Google and transfer money to other people, whereas Android Pay is now just going to be the contactless on-device payment portion of Google's larger money efforts. It really, you know, looking from the outside in, it does seem mostly like an attempt to ride the coattails of Apple Pay and the big splash that made when Apple announced it, despite the fact that Apple Pay is very similar to Google Wallet's own contactless payment system. Android Pay's differences, I mean, you're probably going to have a much more modern-looking application, and it's likely we'll see new features in there, but what those new features are, it really isn't clear yet.
How about Samsung Pay? What's your best information about when that's going to launch?
Well, Samsung Pay should launch in beta this week. I believe it actually launches tomorrow in beta, which is what makes this August 26th date for Android Pay potentially seem more likely. Samsung announced that Samsung Pay will officially launch, I believe, on September 28th, but there is a beta you can participate in starting tomorrow if you have a compatible device. So it's possible Google saw this and went, well, you know, we need to get our system out there now before Samsung has a chance to steal our thunder here. So maybe that is to do with this. Samsung Pay uses a different technology. It's not NFC-based. It uses something called MST, which is a magnetic stripe technology, where essentially the phone emulates a magnetic stripe credit card or debit card. And whereas Android Pay will use the near-field communication system that Google Wallet and Apple Pay utilize.
If you were a Samsung user in the near future, which would you prefer?
Well, I would personally, if you're going to ask me, I would probably say neither. I still don't really see the great appeal of contactless payments. The difference between getting out my phone and pressing it against a machine and having to tap a confirmation on screen versus getting out my wallet and having to just swipe a card, I do sometimes struggle to see the real benefit to the former.
I think it just makes paying for things a little bit easier and maybe a little bit more fun and make you want to buy an extra order of fries or something like that when you go to McDonald's.
There is definitely a novelty to it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David Ruddick is at androidpolice.com and on Twitter at RDR0B11. Thank you so much for joining us today, David.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. Google is testing a new feature for Google Maps that lets foodies upload pictures of their pizza, sandwiches, and cheesecake. Liam Spradlin is editor at Android Police and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Liam.
Hey, glad to be here.
So glad you're here. Now, how is this related to a now-defunct service called Tablescape?
So Tablescape was an app that Google was experimenting with a few months ago, I think back in February. And basically, it was an extension of Google+. So it was like a social platform for sharing photos of food related to restaurants. You could tag them with categories and stuff like that. Google eventually decided to close down the experiment, but they said to the testers, don't worry, we're not giving up on food photography, so the things we learned here might show up in other products. And indeed, now that's happening with a new feature that's rolling out to local guides on Maps. So it's in testing right now. Basically, Maps will see when you take a photo at a restaurant or bar or some other food-related place, and it'll prompt you to attach that photo. So the capability to add photos to places like this is already something that's present in Maps, but this is kind of, I guess, promoting that action a little more to users, which makes sense. I would say that this is definitely the influence the Tablescape had on Google's other products.
So, Liam, you wrote that the feature will roll out to local guides, and this is a quote, level 3 and above. What does that mean? And how do you get to be a local guide level 3? It sounds like maybe that's some...
it's like Scientology.
What's the motivation? Do you have to be clear?
So local guides are people who essentially write reviews and kind of participate in the Google Maps, like location community of sharing reviews and other information about places that they go locally. So I think if you submit a certain number of those reviews... you can eventually become a local guide, and then the more you participate, the more you, I guess, level up. So level 3, I guess, would be pretty active local guides who are getting to test this now.
Wow, that's funny. I'd never heard that before. Now, Google's probably second only to Microsoft in their ability to create confusion around their products, and so I'm hoping you can clarify this fact. So Google bought Zagat, I guess is how you pronounce it. Some time ago. They integrated it into both Google Plus and Google Maps. And if you updated something on Plus, it would reflect on Maps and so on. And I don't really see the Zagat branding anymore. I still see ratings. I'm confused about what is going on when it comes to restaurant. Like when I open a restaurant on Google Maps, what am I looking at?
So I think they still use Zagat as a source for reviews, if that makes sense. It's still its own app on the Play Store. So it's still doing its own thing, but I would say that they probably took some of the elements from that and rolled it into their own review spaghetti that lays on top of Google Plus and Maps. So yeah, I would say I'm not 100% clear on it either, but I would say that influence from Zagat carries over to what they're doing.
You know, it's kind of funny that the feature that existed within Google Plus was fantastic. It was a fantastic experience. I think I was the only person using it, but it was great. And it was just everything you wanted in that kind of thing. You could write a review. You could upload all these photos. The photos would appear with the restaurant. Then those would go over to Maps. Everything worked great. They've removed it now from Google Plus, and I'm hoping they can capture some of the experience, although I'm not optimistic given how the experience of using Google Photos is not as good as the photo experience in Google Plus was and still is. If you dig in there and use it, that's still there. Do you have any indication of other ways that you're going to be able to upload food photos into Google Maps, specifically from Google Photos? Is there any indication that Google Photos might be a doorway into these food photos?
We haven't seen anything like that yet, but I do agree that handling things from Google Plus made a lot of sense because it's a place that... you know, facilitates writing and sharing content that way. Whereas Maps, people, as one of the commenters on our post said, people don't really think about this being a Maps feature of going in and sharing content that way. So the short answer is no, we don't have any indication of that. But I think it would make sense to make things smoother.
This is one of the trends that I think people don't talk about enough about with Google. What happens is that some bunch of startups will come out with a product that does something specific. Like Wine and Dine, for example, is all about sharing food photos. And there are many others. And then people, of course, do it on Instagram and so on. And Google comes along, and instead of coming out with a competitive product, they basically say, that's not a product. It's just a feature. And we're adding this feature to some one of our products, and we're done with it. I'm not sure that's the best strategy, but it seems to be what they're kind of doing here. Well, right. Liam Spradlin is at androidpolice.com and on Twitter at Liam Spradlin. Thank you so much for joining us today, Liam.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Twitter has closed about 30 websites that archive deleted tweets by politicians. The sites were known as Politwhoops and were run by the Open State Foundation. Twitter closed them by suspending their access to the Twitter API on Friday. Twitter said that the closure was the result of thoughtful internal deliberation. The U.S. version of Politwhoops was closed in June. The new closures affect country-specific sites in dozens of other nations. Lindsay Turrentine, this bugs me because essentially what they're doing is they're trying to encourage politicians to use Twitter, and they figure that if politicians are using Twitter, then other users will benefit from their presence on Twitter. But I don't think this serves democracy. I think that the idea of catching people, politicians, with tweets that they immediately regret was kind of a nice benefit to voters and citizens around the world.
Oh yeah, this makes me furious. I mean, this is crazy, right? Like, Twitter is a platform for public dialogue.
Yeah.
And there's no, as a journalist, right, we document what happens, and Twitter is not necessarily a journalism platform, but I believe very much that if you say something publicly, you've said it publicly, and that is in the public record. And, you know, there's no, this doesn't exist in other platforms, right? If a politician goes on CNBC, for instance, or goes on any network talk show, something on Fox News or something on MSNBC, and says something stupid, it's there. It's on people's DVRs. And even if it doesn't get like clipped and put on the web later, it happened, it was said, and that gets documented. And just, I don't know, it's really frustrating. And plus, I was looking through the recent Politwhoops. To be honest, most of them are just deleting typos, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oops, I didn't phrase that correctly. Let me phrase it again. I don't know. This seems ridiculous.
It does seem ridiculous. Sometimes, though, there's something really good. Like, there was one representative who was tweeting to a bikini model during the State of the Union address saying, love you, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And that was kind of creepy. But that's something I think voters want to know. I think this excuse that Twitter's laying out there, which is essentially that why should politicians be treated differently than other Twitter users, is bogus.
Totally. I mean, they're politicians. That's why. They chose to do this job.
Exactly. In exchange for having so much power over all of our lives, making determinations about what we can do and what we can't do, and making decisions about foreign policy and the military and so on. I mean, the in exchange for all that power, fame, and all the rest, they get extra scrutiny. And I think that Twitter, if Twitter wants to be the public square, they have to allow that kind of scrutiny. And it just bugs me. It bugs me a lot. And it also bugs me because so many stories about Twitter over the last couple of years are about them closing APIs, shutting people out. Twitter is what it is because of third-party integrations. And in my opinion, the reason Google Plus isn't a lot more heavily used is because they don't allow those kinds of third-party integrations. I think it's a mistake for a site like Twitter to not allow as many of these as any, you know, whatever people want to do. Well, like, why not? People want to expose these politicians, and there are people who want to consume that content. So why jump in there and stop it? I just think it's a big mistake.
Yeah, this topic of transparency gets discussed a lot in The Circle by Dave Eggers. I don't know if you've read that. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
This idea that maybe too much transparency can be dangerous. But in this particular case, this is transparency that the politicians chose, right? Yeah. Like, if a politician or their aide types something into Twitter and hits send, they made a choice to make it public. And I just don't see any reason that Twitter even needs to extend that olive branch. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it's part of a larger trend, actually, yet another larger trend, which is that these big social networks and Apple are bending over backwards these days to serve the elites at the expense of the riffraff. So examples include, you know, Apple's Connect feature, which you can't really use unless you're a music person. You know, Twitter has all kinds of benefits for verified users. For example, you can tune out everybody else who isn't verified, and so you can live in this sort of lofty world of verified users only and not be notified from people who are not verified. Facebook has its new, the video streaming thing. It's like Meerkat essentially, but you have to be well known and verified and all that stuff to use it. So there's a lot of like really serving existing elites at the expense of everyday users. And I think this is yet another example. And I think they're disingenuous in saying that it's the opposite. That saying, oh, we're treating everybody equally. No, I don't agree with that at all. That's problematic. Well, let's jump to our next story, which will come at the end with a huge prediction on my part, which may or may not be true, but we'll see how I do here. Leaked pictures that show a future Nexus phone under development by Huawei have emerged. Like most phone leaks, this one pretty much shows a rectangle with glass on one side. But on the back, there's something intriguing. There appears to be camera electronics that are far too big to fit inside a normal case. So it protrudes at the top of the back plate to make room for whatever it is that's in there. Rumors suggest that two Huawei Nexi could hit before the holidays. All right, Lindsay Turrentine, here's my prediction. And again, I agree, this is kind of a dark horse. But what if this is Project Tango as a consumer product?
Whoa.
Project Tango is, of course, Google's experimental system for indoor 3D mapping in real time. It requires extra electronics. They sent it to a product division from Google X Labs into a product division some months ago. They've had the SDK out there for a while already, and this phone would hit by the end of the year. And you can imagine a company like Huawei, which is really good at making high-quality, super inexpensive devices, could be the vendor to make a Project Tango phone that's affordable enough for the mass market. What do you think of that idea?
Just based on the way this looks, I think that that's a totally fair prediction. It's kind of interesting, this big protruding camera area. It looks like, just on these spy photos, that there's just one lens and a flash, but maybe there's room for something else lurking in there. I think you need multiple lenses. Maybe it's much smaller. It makes sense. I don't see any reason to think that that's a silly idea.
Yeah. And, all these major companies are able to fit camera electronics, with the exception of Apple, into the thickness of their devices. Right.
So,
And Apple's cameras, pretty, all these cameras, like, the Samsung cameras, these are fantastic cameras. So the possibilities are that the phone is so thin that they couldn't get the camera in there. I don't think that's likely. We see the thickness of the phone. It doesn't look that thin. Another one is that it's got just amazing camera, maybe it's a 41 megapixel camera, some crazy thing like that. Yet another one is that something not entirely related to the camera. It could be something really kind of wild, like a sort of a in-the-air gesture thing, although that doesn't make sense because it's on the back. So how would that work? That doesn't make any sense. And the other one is Project Tango. So I don't, something's going on there, and it's really kind of interesting. And it's a rare event in the world of smartphone leaks that there's actually something on the, visible from the outside that makes you go, huh, there's something different going on.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is that Nexus phones aren't known for their camera quality,
yeah.
Right? Like, that's not the first thing that people think of when they think of a Nexus phone. It could be that Google's just trying to fix that and working with Huawei on kind of upping the reputation of the Nexus camera by putting some monster in there. But I think you're probably right.
And Jason wanted to make it clear that also the Samsung has a protruding camera, but it's just the little piece there. So this is the of course the edge. So anyway, can't wait to find out what the heck is going on. I'm keeping this phone, Jason. Just thought you should know. You can have my iPhone. All right. Well, in product update news, Apple has issued a recall for a small number of iPhone 6 Plus phones because their cameras take blurry pictures. Most of the recalled phones were sold between September and January. Apple promised to replace affected phones for free. Just go to the Apple website to check eligibility. You'll be asked to enter your serial number of your phone. They'll tell you how to get that serial number.
I wonder what happened.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know. Like, the glass was maybe not quite up to par
something
on the lens.
Who knows? But unfortunately, mine is not affected, so I don't get a brand new phone.
Ah.
Yeah, darn it. All right, and big number news, 380,000. That's how many dollars Ashley Madison is offering as a reward for information that leads to the identification, arrest, and prosecution of the hackers who leaked the personal information of millions of users and also leaked internal company information. That's a lot of money.
It is. I think that Ashley Madison has gotten great advertising out of this.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You think this makes, you think that the fact that all this information in the public sphere makes everybody want to go rushing off to sign up?
I don't know. I feel like there's probably, there are a bunch of not smart people out there who are like, oh, well, they fixed it now.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. People are weird.
People are weird. This is true. Theme of the day. People are weird. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Sashi Belamconda in Washington, D.C., who posted this picture on Flickr and Twitter. And he says he's listening while waiting at the Grosvenor Metro in Washington, D.C. There he is. Awesome. Great selfie. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, or Flickr. And use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Lindsay Turrentine, what is going on with you these days? What are you working on?
Oh, we are getting ready big time for IFA, which is coming next week, but lots of planning for that. And, you know, in case you don't know, that's a big consumer electronics show in Berlin.
Yep.
And we expect about 27,000 Android watches. That's what we expect.
Awesome. Awesome. Are you sending people there? Or do you have people in Germany or how does that work?
We're sending some people and we have a lot of our London crew going.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Lucky bastards. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay Turrentine, and we will see you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Bye-bye. You can subscribe to Tech News Today via RSS. You can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me at elgin.com. Also, don't miss our other tech news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.